tonight, and I want to congratulate Stu. Stu's really done a lot of work. He's helped me a lot. And I'm happy for Dick, too. Dick's my buddy. So it's really neat. Tonight, we're going to be looking at page 80 to 82. We're not going to do the promises this week. We'll do them next week, the nine-step promises. And we spent some time looking at the directions on amends and the willingness required to do amends in the eighth step. They talked to us about those you hate that you need amends to. They talked to us about how we approach that person. They talked about criminal activities, money, when other people are involved. But now we're going to go to the ones where they talk about domestic troubles. And what I've noticed is that when they wrote this book, I don't know if it was the Times, but they didn't talk about ex-domestic troubles. They talked about in a marriage, which we're going to read with, there was infidelity and how you make up for that in one way or the other. And that's usually through, in this book, the man, but it could be the other way as well. We'll read that, but then I want to have some thoughts on how do you deal with relationships that went awry, marriages that ended? Do you make amends? How do you make up for those things? How do people clear the barrier between the other person? Is it even possible? Because if you go to a lot of meetings, you'll hear a lot of resentments about relationships that didn't go well and what's happening with the other person. And there's not a lot in the book on how you deal with that. But I have some thoughts. So we're going to do the chances are that we have domestic troubles. Anybody have domestic troubles when they come in here? Anybody have a domestic life? People who we are mixed up with women in a fashion we wouldn't care to have advertised. We doubt if, in this respect, alcoholics are fundamentally much worse than other people. But drinking does complicate sex relations in the home. Remember, Bill W. wrote this, and I won't go into his history. But there were apparently some issues. I don't know. I wasn't there. I can only tell you what I've heard. It says, after a few years with an alcoholic, a wife gets worn out, resentful, and uncommunicative. Now, that could also be for somebody that you were married to and you're not married to anymore. They could be worn out, resentful, and uncommunicative with you. And he says, how could she be anything else? And then the husband, I like this, the husband, you know, he's been the mess. He begins to feel lonely, sorry for himself. Anybody relate to that? Self-pity. You know, look at all I'm doing. She doesn't understand. I mean, we can rationalize any behavior and make sense. And I think that's one of the great problems with us getting well is we can rationalize almost anything, the alcoholic. He commences to look around the nightclubs or their equivalent for something besides liquor. Perhaps he's having a secret and exciting affair with the girl who understands, in quotations. In fairness, we must say that she may understand, but what are we going to do about a thing like that? Now, here's a great line. I've seen this before, but it's a new line in the big book. There's some new words in here. A man so involved often feels very remorseful at times. Sounds pretty good, right? Well, look what it says. Often feels at times. Why isn't he remorseful all the time? You know, he's done some horrible behavior. Why is there times when he's not remorseful? You know, especially if he's married to a loyal and courageous girl who's literally gone through hell for him. Whatever the situation, we usually have to do something about it. If we are sure our wife does not know, should we tell her? Not always, we think. If she knows in a general way that we have been wild, should we tell her in detail? Undoubtedly, we should admit our fault. She may insist on knowing all the particulars. She will want to know who the woman is and where she is. We feel we ought to say to her that we have no right to involve another person, which is true. And then also, it's not mentioned in here, but when you've had issues like this, there are a lot of people that are affected besides the two people. There may be children involved, other spouses, parents. It could be endless, the amount of damage you can do. And they're going to talk about that on the next page when they talk about we're like the tornado coming out of the cellar after the tornado, and we say, isn't everything grand? The wind stopped blowing. We don't see the damage we did. She may insist on knowing all the particulars. I read that. If we feel we ought to say to her that we have no right to involve another person, which I believe is true, we are sorry for what we have done, and God willing, it shall not be repeated. More than that, we cannot do. We have no right to go further. Though there may be justifiable exceptions, and though we wish to lay down no rule of any sort, we have often found this the best course to take. I think that's something that each person has to decide for themselves with their sponsor or somebody who had a similar situation. Fortunately, I never had any of that issues, so I can't advise people, but you might want to find somebody who's had to deal with that, and so that they can give you their experience. And notice you don't make the amends before you get to step 8 or 9. You have to do a lot of work. Hopefully by this time, you have done a thorough 4-step for your spouse, if you're still married, and you have changed the way you see her, and you have at least a kindly and tolerant attitude towards them. And so that changes. And also, hopefully, you've done your what's called the 4th column and looked at your mistakes in the relationship and seen the truth about your behavior, so you'll change the way you see that other person. And that will resolve a lot of this bitterness that exists in your mind. You can't resolve the bitterness in somebody else's mind. That's another problem. We want them to be a certain way. They're going to be whatever way they are. We have no control over that. It says, our design for living is not a one-way street. It is good for the wife, it's for the husband, it's good for everybody. The problem is, and we talked about it working with others to wives and some of these other chapters, I can't make somebody else have a spiritual life or be able to look at the work the steps in their life and change their attitudes. I have no power to do that. The only thing I can do is work the steps for me and change the way I react to the other person. And the one thing we could always be is kind and loving and tolerant and patient, considerate and compassionate. It says it is good for the wife, it's for the husband. It says, and then it could be, what about exes? You know, that's what I see as we have a lot more divorce than they had in 1939. We have a lot more relationships in which there's issues involved. And so it says, if we can forget, so can she. It is better, however, that one does not needlessly name a person upon whom she can vent jealousy. Now, he's going to talk some more about this infidelity issue. Perhaps there are some cases where the utmost frankness is demanded. No outsider can appraise such an intimate situation. It may be that both will decide that the way of good sense and loving kindness is to let bygones be bygones. Each might pray about it, having the other one's happiness uppermost in mind. That's a good suggestion for anything. Always think about how you can help the other person. Keep it always in sight that we are dealing with that most terrible emotion, jealousy. Good generalship may decide that a problem be attacked on the flank rather than the risk of face-to-face combat. How you deal with that, you need to think about it, pray about it, ask God's guidance, talk to someone. Don't make it worse. Try not to make it worse. Now, what I thought about is we have a lot of relationships that didn't work out. And then you still have to deal with the other person. There's money issues, children in some cases, possessions. And how do you make amends for that? And then we tend to blame the other person. Then we have shame and guilt of our own behavior. How do we deal with that? And then how do you make an emotional restitution? Is it possible? Think about it. And so the one thing I thought about is that if you've been in a relationship it didn't work out, hopefully you've done inventory and you've looked at that honestly with someone else. You've looked at the resentment or anger you had. You can work the prayers in page 66, 67 and change your attitude to the other person. Doesn't mean you excuse their behavior, but you can forgive them and you can accept things as they are and use the serenity prayer. Now, one of the things I've heard at a lot of meetings, there's money issues involved. How can you deal with that in a positive manner? Work the steps. You need to make sure you're doing what is right and not carrying in emotional baggage with it? What is the right thing to do? What is the thing that that will make you have peace with the situation? And then with children, how can you be the best parents for these children? And then there's always possessions, fighting over possessions. Are they really that important? And then figure out a way to deal in a positive way. I'm certainly no expert on that, but I noticed the big book doesn't talk about it at all. And it's one of the things that really is hard when you're dealing with ex-relationships. An emotional restitution, can you ever make emotional restitution? And is it reasonable? Is that something that's in the amends? I don't know. The one thing you could do is make sure that you have the willingness to forgive and to be decent to the other person in your life, and how you can treat and work with them in a positive relationship, if possible. The other person may not allow it. Well, that you have no control over that. So we'll talk about that. I'm sure people have some thoughts. I know it's rare in AA, but it's certainly something that I've seen most people, when they come in before they've done their fourth step, it's the thing that's causing a lot of emotional damage. The one thing that works is that people are just people. They are who they are. You're not going to change them. You can only change your attitude and the way you react to them. And then you have to do what's right and not worry about the drama. And here they talk about, and that's hard to do. Perhaps there are some cases where the utmost frankness is demanded. No other can appraise such an intimate situation. It may be, well, I already read that, so what do I do with that? Well, I'm sick, so you'll forgive me. I got a bad cold. And
that's okay.
I came here under, got off my sick bed to come in here, so, all right. It says, if we have no such complication, there's plenty we should do at home. Sometimes we hear an alcoholic say the only thing you need to do is keep sober. Have you ever heard that?
Yeah.
I'm sober 30 days. Why is it things better? Blah, 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 blah. Now, they're talking about not drinking. They're not talking about emotional sobriety or having worked the steps. The thing about the fourth step, and that's why you do steps 4 and 5 before you get to 8 or 9, is hopefully you've changed the way you see these individuals and you've really looked honestly at your mistakes. And when you do that, it changes the way you see these things. And so it certainly has for me. And I could see things that I never saw before, how fear and I was dishonest in the way I portrayed my emotions. Out of fear for economic consequences and things like that, things that I never thought of before until I did the fourth step. It says, certainly he must keep sober, for there will be no home if he doesn't. But he is yet a long way from making good to the wife or parents whom for years he has so shockingly treated. And that could be true with anybody. Passing all understanding is the patience mothers and wives have had with alcoholics. Had this not been so, many of us would have no homes today, would perhaps be dead. So all you can do once you start working the steps is try to live a spiritual life and practice the principles in all your affairs, and that's all you can do. You can't change anything that happened in the past. If you can, let me know. It says, but you can change the way you react to it and the way you see it now. It says the alcoholic is like a tornado. I don't know if any of you relate to this. It's like a hurricane. It's a Category 5 storm. You'll see pictures tomorrow of Puerto Rico. And that's what it looks like when we come up to AA. Calm down, Roman. You know, it's devastation. You know, the 180-mile-an-hour winds, I can't even imagine. If any of you been to the Caribbean, they don't have the brick homes, you know. The place is going to be completely demolished. And so we're like a tornado or hurricane roaring through the lives of others. Hearts are broken. Sweet relationships are dead. Affections have been uprooted. Anybody think that's true?
Mm-hmm.
Selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. But I don't know if you can really see it in the beginning. And then when you see it, and it makes you sad, right? You wish you hadn't been that way. And then you have to figure out how you can make amends to these people and how you can change and what you can do to change yourself. Selfish, we feel a man is unthinking when he says that sobriety is enough. And we hear that a lot. They talk here about being sober, but remember, when you're sober without the program, you have untreated alcoholism. You're sober, but you haven't treated the disease. And remember, sober without alcohol, we are left with no solution to our self-centered personality and our unmanageable life. So just being sober may not change the way we act. In fact, it may be worse. I've heard people say, well, you've been sober 30 days and it's worse. Why don't you drink? I've heard people tell me, people told them that. And it says, he is like the farmer who came up out of a cyclone cellar to find his home ruined. To his wife, he remarked, don't see anything the matter here, Ma. Ain't it grand the wind stopped blowing? Now, I will say one thing. It's certainly better to stop drinking if you want your relationships to get better. But that isn't really going to be enough, especially in these complicated situations. Ain't it grand the wind stopped blowing? We don't see the damage. It says, yes, there's a long period of reconstruction ahead. We must take the lead. A remorseful mumbling that we are sorry won't fill the bill at all. Well, we've said that a million times. And it says, we ought to sit down with the family and frankly analyze the past as we now see it. I would suggest you not do it like your first week. Right. And I would suggest that when you see it, you make sure you've been over how you see it with a sponsor. So you're seeing it through somebody else's eyes. And not somebody's going to say, gee, they were really bad. You're right. That was a mess. No, you want somebody who takes you through the steps, usually after you've done the fourth step. How do you see it now? And hopefully you see it differently. You see it the way God would see it. Being very careful not to criticize them. Their defects may be glaring, but the chances are that our own actions are partly responsible. I think the chances are very good. And so we clean house with the family. This is what we want to do. We want to clean house with the family. And here's a prayer I use every day. Asking each morning in meditation that my Creator show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. So I look at it as not just the family, but the world, everyone in it, all of God's kids. And the prayer says, I read it, Creator, show me patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. Anybody think that's a good idea? But it's not what it says. It says, show me the way of it. God's going to show me the way of doing this. So you can meditate on that. I like to use the St. Francis prayer, too. How can I, the way of being this, how does patience look? How does tolerance look, kindliness look, love look? And it's also not, it's unconditional love. And so that's a good meditation, and I try to practice that during the day. I'm not perfect at it. Some days I forget for a while, but usually if I'm off the beam, I know I'm not practicing tolerance, kindliness, and love. And so to get back on the beam, I have to say, God, I need to change the way I'm acting here. Show me the way. That's like the sixth and seventh step. God, take away my character defects. Show me the way to do this. And it says, the spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. Now, is the spiritual life a good idea, you think? It makes sense? Anybody want to live a spiritual life? Good, because on page 44, the book ties together. Jimmy, you got it? 44. 44, buddy. All right. And I wrote, in the thought today, I wrote about the purpose of the big book. On the third paragraph, it says, the second paragraph, it says, to be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis. Those are really our only two choices in AA. There's no other choice. Now, a lot of people don't see that. Are not easy alternatives to face. Now, that could mean that the alcoholic can't even see that they only have two alternatives. Or when they see it, they don't know how to live a spiritual life, and they don't know how to change it. But that's the only two doors we have, alcoholic death or spiritual life. And I think it's a gift when you can see the two doors and you can see that alcoholic death is a bad idea. And you can say, I really want to try the spiritual life. And usually it's with a lot of pain and you feel defeated and you're ready to do it. And it says, the next paragraph, it says, the third or fourth line, it says, after a while I had to face the fact, so here's a fact that I must face, that I must find the spiritual basis of life, dash, or else. Now, or else is not good, right? Just in case you don't know that. And so I have to find the spiritual basis of life. Everybody agree, right? There are only two doors. Well, here's the problem. On page 44, it says, I don't have the power to do that. I don't have the power of my own to live a spiritual life. I can want to, I can try, but I don't have the power. It's not there. I need a power greater than myself to live. And this power helps me live a spiritual life. And one of the ways it does that is that, and by the way, it says that's what this book is about. The main object is enabled to me to find a power greater than yourself. And it's, the book is going to describe how we get that. And so to live a spiritual life, I need God's guidance. To practice love, patience, kindness, and tolerance, I can't wake up in the morning and say, I'm going to do that, Michael, and do it. I have to need God's help to do that, and I need to go to God when I see things self-centered. I don't know if any of you have that experience. You'll talk about it. We'll open it up in a second. Unless one's family expresses a desire to live upon spiritual principles, that's what we're trying to do. We think we know not to urge them. We should not talk incessantly to them about spiritual matters. When people are in a resentment and they're really going good, they don't want to hear, you know, you might want to look at that and say the prayer and change the way you see it. Sometimes they're not really anxious to do that. And they get mad. But we know the solution. We know that the resentment, and when people are angry, it's killing them. But we can't make them willing to let go of it. They will change in time. Our behavior will convince them more than our words. So we have to act a different way. They see it, and then they say, well, there's a change. And I might want to try what he's doing or she's doing. And so we are the best example of what the spiritual life, the program can do and the steps can do for someone is how we act. And if we don't change, then they won't see that. Our behavior will convince them more than our words. We must remember that 10 or 20 years of drunkenness would make a skeptic out of anyone. Now here's a great paragraph and then we'll open up. There may be some wrongs we can never right. It's absolutely true. And remember, there's some wrongs that you'd like to right, but you know that you're going to do more harm to do so. So the thing is, are there any wrongs that you're not willing to right? And if there are, then you're okay. Now, you can't right them all, and if you right them, in some cases, you make it worse. And I was thinking about this ex-relationships. Sometimes you just make it worse. But if you would be willing to change, you're willing to do, if you understood that you don't want to do those things again, and you'd be willing to change and willing to make it right if you could, then that will set you free. We don't worry about them if we can honestly say to ourselves that we would right them if we could. That's the key. Some people cannot be seen. We send them an honest letter. Have someone else read it before you send it sometimes. That's a good idea. Don't send it your first week. And wait. I mean, we want people to like us. We're people pleasers. We want to be forgiven. All of us want that. But that's not what the ninth step is about. The ninth step is setting us free of the bondage of our behavior towards them and be willing to change. And there may be a valid reason for postponement in some cases, but we don't delay if it can be avoided. Now, you know, in 1939, they lived in communities. They didn't travel a lot. They could find most of the people within a few blocks of their home that they'd made a mess of their lives with. Now, we travel a lot. We have internet. We can find anybody if we want. And so how does that apply now? Be careful not to make things worse. Your desire for forgiveness or your desire for people to like you should not be the priority here. It's your priority is to make restitution, to make it, to clean your side of the street. And you have to be careful. I don't think you should Twitter either. I don't Twitter, but I don't think that's the best way. If you can't send the letter, don't Twitter. Tweet. Is it Tweet or Twitter?
Tweetbook.
Well, there you go.
It's Tweetbook.
All right. I'm being recorded. Obviously, I know very little about any of this. Yeah. I was going to say something political, but I won't. But all right. Well, we have a president. Can you imagine the amends he's going to have to make after 3 years? Oh, my God. Yeah. Well, he won't be the only one. I stay in the big book. I stay off CNN and Fox. I just thought I'd say that for the big book's a lot better. Leads to more peace and serenity. It says, we don't delay if it can be avoided. Now, here's the thing that I need to remember. I always have to be sensible, tactful, and considerate and humble. It's hard. Sensible. And you could ask God and meditate on how is it to be tactful or sensible, considerate, and humble without being servile or scraping. Now, humble means that you want to seek God's guidance and help. You want to be in the image of your Creator. You want God's power. And it says, as God's people, we stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone. Now, this is really important because you may try to make right in these very complicated emotional relationships, but if they don't accept it, you know, you don't keep doing it. Some people won't forgive you. They don't have power then if they forgive you, and they don't want to, and they have their own motives. But Joe and Charlie said, you only pay the electric bill once. You don't keep paying it, and that's very powerful. And, you know, I've talked to some guys in the rooms. You know, they only do it once. Keep trying to do it. It'll just make it worse. And so that's the amends, and then we're going to look at the ninth step and see the ninth step promises, and we'll look at those and see how they relate to the ninth step and where we are in the book. So we'll open that up and have people share. There's a lot of stuff in there.